First South Connection podcast network listeners, JT here with another edition of My Mailbag, our 10th one. Amazing, double digits, here we are. I want to thank everyone who took the time to submit a question to me on social media via our Place to Be Facebook group page. If you're not in there and you want to be, just reach out and we can get you added. We have a lot of cool discussion going throughout the days and news and notes and other random topics get posted there. And then stuff like this, whether it's feedback or questions for our mailbag or things to even read on air. Like you may listen to Aaron George's The Year That Was every other Monday here on the North South, where he's going through a ranking of every WWF pay-per-view year of all time. He watched all of them, took him 3 years and ranked them. He's into the very top of the top at this point now. But what he does before he records, he does put a post up looking for feedback. He reads that on air. So it's definitely worth checking out. Plus, you get all the latest and greatest from all of the feeds here as part of the Place to Be Nation family of podcast networks. All right. Here's the concept. You send me questions. I read the questions and I answer them right here on the show. So let's do it. If I'm going to start with a big one and then I'm going to taper down tonight. If the Money in the Bank concept and pay-per-view had existed in the Federation era, 86 to 92, or the Attitude era, 97 to 01, what wrestlers would you have win it? How would they have cashed it in? And that is from my good friend Down Under, Dapper Dave Hall. And this is actually a question I heard a couple weekends ago as well. All right, let's start with the Federation era. And if I get hot, I'll do them all. If not, we'll save the Attitude era for next time. This is an interesting one, kind of a cool rebook. And I actually think this could be a podcast. I mean, you may have heard No Holds Barred, myself and Aaron, every other week, every other Saturday here, we do like different kind of lists and games and different rankings. This is something, seems like something the wheelhouse we would have done. We recently did a King of the Ring rebook, where we rebooked every King of the Ring tournament. But something like this may be interesting to do as like a deeper dive. But off the top of my head, I'm going to say 1986 is 100%. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. And he does that before he does the heel turn. This is the late great now, sadly, Paul Orndorff. And he wins the Money in the Bank. And, you know, he asks Hogan, like, look, I'm not going to cash in on you. If I do, I'm going to do it like a man. But can you just help me train so when the time comes, I'm ready? And then you go right into the same story, right? He's trying to call Hogan, or Hogan's too busy, and Orndorff's trying to get a hold of him. And all this other stuff goes on. And then Orndorff kind of finally snaps and attacks him, pile drives him. And you can either do the cash in there, or he says, look, I didn't turn on my back on my word. You did as a friend. So I'm still going to challenge you man to man straight up. I'll see you at the big event in Toronto. So you could do it that way, or you could have him do it on the spot where he pile drives Hogan and maybe Hogan kicks up or something. But personally, I'd use it to draw the house. So I'd do it that way. I think 87, I'm doing Savage. He seems like the most logical. And then I'm just not sure. Does that change the trajectory of WrestleMania 4? Maybe instead of the tournament, it's him cashing in on, you know, Ted DiBiase, who recently got awarded the title by Andre the Giant. You could do something like that. 1988. I hate to just keep picking, like, the next champion. That's one of the issues with the hindsight of this because, you know, are these guys all losing, or is this how they're becoming world champion? It's kind of a tricky way to go back and look at it because, I mean, 88... it feels like it should be like Ultimate Warrior, but honestly, I think I would go Rick Rude. I think he'd be a real interesting choice to win it in 88 and start to ramp him up for a bigger push in 1989. Now, 89 is another time it could be Ultimate Warrior, and you could use that to set him up as the number one contender for WrestleMania 6 if you want to go that way. And as I'm doing this, like, it just makes you realize how much less work the Money in the Bank leads to them having to do, like, for these title matches and shots. Like, they had to work their way up to Warrior Hogan and get there organically versus just look at, oh, Warrior won the briefcase and he's cashing in a Mania. But Mr. Perfect is obviously the other option in 1989. He was red hot in 89, undefeated, and he sets up to be a main event player in 1990. So I think he would have been the choice there. 1991, it's a little tricky. I guess what time of year is that? Sid probably isn't there soon enough for it to be him. I don't think I would do Jake. I think Flair comes in too high. I mean, maybe Big Boss Man. He might be a fun one. Brett, I guess, although I think I would do Brett 92. He'd be my choice for 92. Cashes in on Flair in Saskatoon. Seems like the perfect use of him there. 91's a tricky one. I guess Boss Man. I'm trying to think of any other option. I mean, you could go DiBiase, but he's kind of played out by that point. Virgil. If you want to give it to Virgil, you could. It's too early in the year to give it to Michaels unless you have him win it as a rocker. And that is how he turns heel, right? Propels him to turn on Jannetty. So I'd say the boss man or Michaels, I guess, would be my choice. 97. We can keep going. So 93, I would have. We already gave him King of the Ring, but Abba Luger is the narcissist in 93. That's my choice there. 94, I'm giving it to Owen. I think I'd still have him win King of the Ring. But that doesn't get him the title match at SummerSlam. It just gets him the crown, and he's going to win the briefcase to get the shot. The other option is that's what you could do for Backlund. That's how he gets his match as a Survivor Series. That'd be kind of cool. Like, he kind of outsmarts everyone to climb the ladder and win the match. Or another option, this might be our busiest year, you could do Razor Ramon, too. Fresh off the big ladder win at WrestleMania, you can say, okay, he's well-versed in these matches, and he was a guy that was starting to come up as well. And God, even Diesel's in the mix in 94. I think 94 has a good crop of potential up-and-comers that could be key challengers to the world title. 95, I've always felt they misused Bam Bam Bigelow. Maybe that's a good, payback for what happened at WrestleMania. I think Shawn's probably past it at that point. You could give it to someone like a Hakushi, would be cool. Or maybe you give it to Brett again, just as a kind of a, keep him busy. Thank you for doing nothing that year. And that's how he gets to Diesel. One other option could be British Bulldog as well, who was flailing a bit until he turned heel. So a few options in there. I kind of like giving it to Brett as a make good. So he comes back and wins it. And that propels him to go to Survivor Series. I think 96, hands down, is Stone Cold Steve Austin. I think he, and I hate to, again, just piggyback the King of the Ring winner, but to me, he feels like the most obvious choice of a guy to win that and then park it for a while he works his way up the ladder. I think another option could be Mankind, but he was so tied up. I mean, he does have the title match with Shawn Michaels, but to me, he's so tied up with Undertaker that he's so embroiled in that he's not fucking around in the ladder match. One other cool option could be Sid as well. I think Sid was so hot coming back International Incident. And then he's going to get the title match anyway. That kind of comes out of nowhere a bit. He beats Vader in that powerbomb match. There's no powerbomb. Buried Alive. So I think you could do Sid as well. Would be a cool one to see him climb the ladder. All right, so that's 96. So 1997, probably a little too soon for The Rock. So I'm going to go Ken Shamrock wins, and he cashes in after Survivor Series on Shawn. So that sets up DX. 98, that is where I go The Rock for sure. That's his come up year. He loses King of the Ring to Shamrock, but he wins Money in the Bank. And that leads to some of the stuff that goes on later in the year with the corporation. I'm sure, Dave, I'm just trying to do this on this podcast. Again, I think we could do deeper. That'd be a cool kind of what if podcast series to really dive into this stuff and break it down further. And this is just off the top of my head. So I'll go up to 01. So 99. Definitely not going Billy Gunn. I think something like X-Pac would be cool. Like, he was so over during that stretch with Kane, and maybe they're in the match together, and they're kind of both standing there, and Kane helps him win, and kind of like, you earned it, kind of thing as his friend, because he always stood up for him. He helps him win, and then he gets a big title shot. Like, that could have been really cool. And maybe he challenges Triple H, or maybe he comes down and tries to cash in on him at that point. The other options, you could just go Triple H if you want, I guess, at some point in there too, in 99, because he's getting the push anyway. He doesn't win King of the Ring. He just kind of becomes number one contender by beating The Rock. So there's an option. 2000 is where things really open up. I mean, you get all the Radicals. You got Chris Jericho as well. You got Taz, in the mix now in 2000. You got Kurt Angle. I think Angle doesn't need it. I think I'm giving it to Jericho, and he cashes in on Triple H, and you could even still do what we did on that April Raw too if you wanted to push that later in the year and do something like that. But I give it to Jericho in 2000. 2001, I think I have a WCW guy steal it, or an Invasion guy, so I give it to RVD 100%. He's the guy. He's getting the mega push. He wins that and gets his little title match later in the year. Maybe they actually do it the right way in this fantasy book land and have him win it when he was at his most molten hot. So good question, Dave. Again, I think this could be a very interesting deep dive podcast, which is kind of what we specialize here on the North-South Connection. On every other Tuesday, we have TNA Never Dies. That's myself, Jenny Smith, and Aaron George going through the history of NWA TNA. We're into early 2003 and a very maniacal look at that. If you like Thor Ragnarok, I think you like TNA Never Dies. Also deep diving on Tuesdays every other week opposite that is the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast. Jake Williams and a rotating bevy bushel of guests comes in and they make their way through 2002 Ruthless Aggression era. He's closing in on 03, actually. He's right around No Mercy time. So in the thick of the SmackDown 6, and No Mercy is on the way soon. And that is a super loaded pay-per-view. Ton of fun. So be sure to check that out. It's two of the deep dive podcasts we have here to offer. All right. Richard Colon. What was the first piece of WWF merch you ever bought? That is a really good question. Trying to think back, because I know I got my Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy in Christmas of, I want to say 91. Or it was in 90 or 91. So it wouldn't have been that. It had to be a wrestling figure. And I know my first wrestling figure, oddly enough, was, I believe, Demolition Axe was my first one. So that might have been my first actual piece of merch. Now, I didn't buy that myself. I think I got it as a gift. I owned the Jake the Snake Snake. I think I bought that at a house show. I never had the Bret Hart sunglasses. My cousin bought the foam urn. I never had the Hogan finger. I'm going to go with the snake, because that seems like something that would have came out in 90 or 91, and I definitely had that. So it was either Jake Snake, one of the figures, or the Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy for sure. All right, what else do we got here? Steven Van Kooten. Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels both had signature title runs in 1994 and 1996, respectively. Looking at those runs only, who was the better champion and who did more for the company? This is I feel like the Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, you know, it's obviously a running commentary across all spectrum of wrestling fans, but especially here on the North South Connection, I feel like, because, you know, I do a lot of podcasts, obviously, with Aaron. You know, I mentioned No Holds Barred, TNA Never Dies. We also do Now Entering the Rumble. It's every other Monday. Where we're breaking down every single Royal Rumble competitor to have ever entered the Royal Rumble, each appearance of them. So we're, you know, double digits into that show. And then you got my good friend Marcus Fuller, who does Viewer's Choice, along with his buddy Tim Not the Toolman Taylor. They're here after every big wrestling pay-per-view or special event. They just did a great listen, recapping Money in the Bank, telling you what to miss, what you missed, what you shouldn't miss, et cetera, et cetera. And he's obviously a Bret Hart diehard, hate Shawn Michaels. Aaron loves Shawn Michaels, not the biggest Bret Hart fan. I feel like I'm stuck in the middle. So, you know, between the two of them, I feel like it's my parents just continuously arguing over this one topic of their lives. And I'm stuck in between because I like both guys. And I've recently deep dived on Shawn Michaels, obviously, on Wrestling Warzone, where Chad and I are going through the Monday Night Wars every other Thursday. And we're in the middle of the Shawn Michaels 96 title run. He is. We're heading right towards SummerSlam. And I'll say this. I think Shawn's peaks were higher. His top matches to me as champion are better. Bret, though, I think was more consistent. He was constantly more on TV. At least it felt that way. Shawn's had some TV matches too, but I feel like I've been let down more on some of the Shawn TV matches. Whereas the Bret ones have like those memorable ones, like 1-2-3 Kid, Bob Backlund. Like there's a few of those sprinkled in throughout 94. Owen on the Action Zone, right? So there's like more of those than there are Shawn, where we've hit some of the ones on TV and it's like, oh, this should be good. And then I don't know if it's just a format of the Raw by 96 being more stale or what it is, but they just don't pop as much. But Shawn's pay-per-view run as champion to me kind of laps Bret, right? Because Bret really only has three defenses on pay-per-view. And again, you can blame the system, but he's only got Diesel at King of the Ring, which is very good. Owen in the Cage, which is, I don't have it as like all-timer, but I have as great. And then him versus Bob Backlund, a Survivor Series, which is really, really, really damn good. But Shawn has, you know, Diesel, which is, you know, a top match in company history. He's got the British Bulldog, disappointing. The second British Bulldog, which is very good. And then SummerSlam, which is great with Vader. Mankind, which is an all-time classic. And then Sid, which is great as well. So I think, to me, Shawn checks in. His peaks are higher. I think Bret's was more consistent. Now, so to me, I guess, you'd have to almost, I think Brett added more prestige to the title in a time where, if you think of what the company was coming off of, right, he was the first guy to really step in to usher in the era of the small guy, right? Because you had Hogan, you had the Monsters, and Brett wins at 92, but then they go back to Yoko and Hogan again. And then Brett really also in 94 is the new generation, right? They start doing those commercials around WrestleMania 10. They give him the big, you know, we fucked up moment at the end of WrestleMania. And now he's the guy on top. And for the first time, there's no big monster challenger. You got Shawn Michaels in the mix. You got Owen. And yeah, you got Diesel, but he's not your prototypical WWF monster. So, like, all of a sudden you got Backlund. All of a sudden he's in the mix with guys his size. So he has to work hard to legitimize himself and that title going in a new direction. So I think he did more for the company from that regard. I think Shawn, and it's tough because I don't have the buy rates in front of me. I know those 96 Raws are tough. But to me, he set the standard, too, in those matches. Like, as a fighting champion that took on all different types of challengers, he had a brawl that was 5 stars. He had a hybrid brawl with Mankind, which is almost 5 stars. He's got the match with Sid where he's bumping around. He's got the stuff with Vader, which is a unique match. So, to me, he's a little bit more, I wouldn't say varied, but he was showcasing what he could do across all different styles and have a extremely high-quality run across a much busier pay-per-view year than Bret Hart had in 1994. Not to say Bret couldn't have done the same. So again, as usual, I feel like it's always, you know, nitpicking, whether it's ranking pay-per-view workers by the month, whether it's doing these King of the Ring rebooks, whatever it is, I feel like these guys always end up next to each other on any kind of list. So I think they both did a lot, but you can also say neither did enough, right? Because it's such a downtime for the business and for the company. And then by the time 96 rolls around, WCW is becoming a locomotive that's just going to start steamrolling. And I don't care what Shawn or Brett was doing. It wasn't going to matter in the face of the NWO. That was more a creative issue than either of them. Do you run the History of Wrestling Facebook page? Answer it here, yes or no. Well, I talked about this last month, Ryan. No, I have access to post, so I don't run the page. All right. All right. Kevin Tucker submitted like 9 of these, so I'll try and do one every episode, maybe. What is the biggest name you ever saw on an indie show? So I think I've seen some decent ones, and it depends what you consider to be indie. So I went to a Ring of Honor show in 2005 when I would say they were firmly in indie still, if you don't consider them one today. And I saw Matt Hardy there, and that was fresh, like right during. I think he had just appeared on Raw in the back when he was starting to come back to feud with Edge. So I saw him there. I would say the biggest star I saw in the smallest setting was Sid, who I saw on an NWA show at Twin River Casino in Lincoln, Rhode Island, which is not a very big casino. It's this tiny little ballroom. Rob Conway was the NWA champion. Sid came out to Ladies and Gentlemen by Saliva and in his jean shorts, and he won a battle royal. I think he didn't win the title, and he lost by DQ or some shit to Conway. I forgot what the finish was, but I saw him in that setting there. And then a few years ago in the XWA, I think they actually just left the building. There was a building in West Warwick near me, which I wish was there when I was a kid. I probably would have went to a lot of shows. But we saw Will Ospreay came in. They brought him in for a show. So that was pretty cool to see him there. So, yeah, I'd say those are probably the three biggest. I think by the time I really started going to the travel weekends, like in the 2014 Rumble, et cetera. Like, obviously, saw AJ Styles at Ring of Honor, but I don't think ROH wasn't like an indie by that point. I would say by the late 2000s, they were kind of in between indie and mainstream, right? So I don't think that counts given the level of star that they had on hand. There's probably one or two I'm missing. It's not really hidden, but nothing's jumping out at me. But those are probably the few biggest. And he also said, is there any dream match that hasn't happened that would really excite you? I'm guessing you mean one that could happen, like not Ken Shamrock versus Kurt Angle, my all-time favorite dream match, or Kurt Angle versus Bret Hart, which would have been awesome. I don't know, like stuff excites me, but I can't sit here and say, oh, like obviously the news just broke that Daniel Bryan and CM Punk are going to AEW. It seems like there's a lot of dream matches embedded there, right? I mean, Punk and Omega, Brian and Omega, there's a lot of guys just killing it. Hangman Page, you know, like, there's dudes that are just getting it done in AEW consistently that have been great up and down the card as they are just on fire as a promotion. And then you got Punk and Brian all of a sudden getting inserted into that, to me, is going to lead itself and lend itself to a lot of different dream matches. I'm sure WWE could put some together. They just seem hesitant to ever do anything to cater to that. They have the roster. I mean, if you really look at it top to bottom, they have one of the greatest rosters in wrestling history, yet they completely misuse it. So I guess I would say probably, I'm not even the biggest Omega guy, but I mean, I would say something along those lines, right? Like, Punk and Brian probably have a ton of dream matches available to them as they hit AEW. So maybe them as a team against the, whatever the hell the names are now. Drawing a blank. The bald dudes. The bald dude with the stupid truck that showed up. They were NXT champions for a while. I'm going to draw a blank. They fought Revival, whatever the names are now. Anyway, so I think them against Punk and Brian as a team could be pretty awesome too. Give me like a good 25-minute classic tag match with those guys. All right, one more from Tucker because I like this one and it's an easy one. What's the best sign you ever made for a live show? So I've definitely made some. One of my favorites was in 2004. Went to Raw. It was right before WrestleMania 20. It was in Bridgeport, and Hercules had just passed away. And we made a sign that said, RIP Hercules. I think me and Mark Claire made it. And speaking of Claire, him and Remso Martinez, every Sunday, without missing a beat, second print comics. They do a great job diving into random topics. I know recently they did a Black Widow episode talking about the new movie, and they hit all kinds of potpourri. So if you're a comics fan, a novice, a veteran, obsessive, they have a really good show for you. And it's every Sunday, 11 a.m. They don't miss one. So we made the RIP Hercules sign, and we're sitting near the commentary table, and we held up the sign and we're yelling for Lawler. And we're like, King, King. And he turns around and gives us a little tip of the crown, you know, and a kind of a sad nod, you know, acknowledging that we were paying tribute to the late great Hercules. One of my other favorite signs I didn't make, but my buddy Chris Lee Burr made, we went to a show, I want to say it was a Raw in 01, he made a Marry Me Linda sign. This was during peak. Like, I think it was in the build to 17. And he drew Linda in the wheelchair on the sign because this is when she was comatose in the wheelchair. And but Marry Me Linda in big, big letters. So those are my two favorites that I have been part of. All right. What else we got here? All right. Mikey Cook. After doing the deeper dive with MSG shows, which three wrestlers do you have a more improved opinion on, and which three are you disappointed? I feel like I've answered this one before, but I'll touch on it. I just mentioned Hercules. I gained more of an appreciation for Hercules, for sure. Some of his earlier stuff, until he turns face, I've actually liked him quite a bit as a heel in that first run, which I never really thought, honestly, I would do. Like, I always kind of liked face Hercules, but watching this, I thought he was much better as a heel in that initial run, and I really, really enjoyed him. I've talked about this before, for sure. I really gained an extra appreciation for Harley Race, who I thought was great, and some of the house show stuff I got to see from him. He ended up cracking my top 100 GWWE list that we did a few years back, just based on some of the stuff I saw of him. One guy that's definitely I've come down on because of this was Haku. I always held him in such a high regard as a singles worker, but he never has a good singles match on these MSG cards. Like, you know, he's great with he's got some really damn good stuff for the Islanders, but every time I think maybe here it comes, it's just nothing. And I know he's had, like, there's always those rumors and legends of his great house show stuff with Ricky Steamboat. But you know, he had one on at MSG with the Dragon and it was fine. It was like 2.5, but he always just tops out in that 2.5 range, which kind of stunk. I was disappointed. I was really hoping for more once he split and went out on his own. You know, there's guys that disappointed more on pay-per-view, like Jake Roberts and DiBiase, that when you hear Aaron talk about them, right? Like, he just did the year that was, so some of those years, like 89 or whatever. And he's like, well, you know, Jake gets worst of the year, which is crazy to think about, right? But yeah, his pay-per-view did kind of suck. You know, he fought that awful match with Andres and that stupid match in Survivor Series. But when you look at him, like, on house shows, that is where he was doing some of his better work. Like, him and DiBiase have good matches at MSG. It just doesn't translate for whatever reason to the pay-per-view opportunity. So I think I'd maybe toss a guy like Jake in there that you would think you know was struggling in the big matches, but was actually delivering on stuff like at MSG. So I'd probably put him on the good side I'm trying to think if anyone else jumps out. Andre, I loved a lot of his MSG stuff. You know, you think of him as being broken down by 87, 88, but he's got some really fun stuff in 88. Honky Tonk Man, I came around on early Honky. I call it delineation by late 87, but in 87, Honky at MSG has some really fun stuff with Steamboat and Savage. So he's a guy I respect a little bit more in that regard when you think of him as just kind of a nothing, usually in the ring. And that does dwindle as you get further into 88. But for a while there, he's definitely up there. I don't know if anyone else that really disappointed me. I think Haku was really the main one. Kind of scanning my list now. Nothing's really super jump. Maybe, I guess, face Hercules. Like I liked it better as a heel, and I lost interest in him as a face. So that's one that kind of did the reverse for me. Yeah, that's probably covers it. I don't see anyone else jumping out. I mean, a lot of them just reaffirmed, right? Like Dino Bravo and dudes like that. Tito. I mean, Tito was awesome, but I already knew he was great. So that didn't really disappoint much at all or improve an opinion at all because I already knew I loved him. All right. Really quick. Every other Thursday, coming back soon. You're hearing this. It is almost August. Coming back at the end of August will be Extreme Three-Way Dance. Every other Thursday, myself, Jenny, and John D'Amato, going through the history of ECW. One of my favorite shows to do because it's stuff I've always wanted to watch and never got sat down to actually watch it and pay attention and critique and talk about it. So we're in the spring of 96, and things are really, really heating up again. I always say that. It's constantly heated up, I guess. But we're going through like another – it's like every 6 months or so in ECW, you get a roster reshuffle. And every time you think, all right, maybe they're going to dip, but they keep finding ways to revitalize and keep the ship moving. So we got some really big stuff coming up. Chris Jericho just debuted, and a lot's going on in early 96 ECW. So that's coming back very soon. What hasn't left at all is from Squared Circle to Silver Screen. Every fourth Saturday, rotating with this and No Holds Barred, Cowboy and Crossland, looking at different movies featuring wrestlers or about wrestling. The most recent one was about The Condemned with Stone Cold Steve Austin. They've done Man on the Moon. They've done They Live. Like they've just done some real classics. Scorpion King, of course, No Holds Barred. So they've done some really fun ones. It's a good quick listen. Let me hit the rest of the shows quickly, and then I'll do one more question. New Gen on a Mission every other Wednesday on North South. Tim Slomka and Justin Pratt going through the New Generation era. They're going from Brett and Sean at Survivor Series 92 to Brett and Sean at Survivor Series 97. They're now inching toward the summer of 93. They did a really good, hefty deep dive into WrestleMania 9, and that's a really fun show. It's a breezy listen. It's a fun listen. And I think that's just about it. I don't think I missed anything. So Rank and File also, of course. Usually every 4 weeks or so. Jordan Duncan, his buddy Eric, maybe a third wheel every now and then. They're rapping toward the end of determining the greatest television theme song of all time. And then I think Jordan's going to be shuffling the concept of the show a bit. So stay tuned for that. And of course, how could I forget? Every 3 weeks-ish on North South, you get 90210. So myself, Tim Capel, in a rotating third chair, going through the chronological history of Beverly Hills 90210. By the time you're listening to this, the newest episode would have dropped. This is episode 4 with our buddy Drew Warlaw. Maybe our shakiest episode so far in the short, very short lifespan of the show. But if you're a diehard 90210, or you're new to the show, or you hate it, just give it a listen. I'm looking for any and all guests to sign up for different episodes to join me and Tim to break that down. All right, I mentioned Slomka, and I mentioned Pratt, and I mentioned WrestleMania 9. So here's Tim. Is there a more worthless Mania match than Razor Ramon versus Bob Backlund at WrestleMania 9? No build, no beatdown by Razor. He wins on a roll-up. How does that make him look strong? So, good one, Tim. I think there have probably been more useless matches, especially in later years. There's a bunch, but that's probably one of the more, probably one of the more worthless ones. Backlund was in a weird spot, and if you listen to New Gen, you hear Tim and Pratt, especially Pratt, really shits all over Backlund in his comeback, because they do present him oddly. He has the dynamite run in the Rumble that they don't really ever follow up on. And then they give him a Mania slot against Razor, who feels like he's in a bit of a holding pattern. So Razor comes in red hot in late 92. He's teaming with Ric Flair against Macho Man and Mr. Perfect. He's, you know, embroiled with the top guys. He gets a world title match at the Royal Rumble against Bret Hart. And then once you get past that, he wins that Battle Royal on Raw. But then he's like, all right, it's kind of like, what do we do with him? And he was so cool. Like, he was already starting to get over. And when he beats Backlund in Mania, he gets a big pop. So it's not a shock that he's a face pretty much by the summer. right? Like, he's kind of a nominal heel for a while until Ted DiBiase tries to get him to clean his toilets around August. But he's got the stuff 1-2-3 Kid coming up. So I do think a more decisive win over Backlund could have made sense. Now, maybe Backlund didn't want to take the razor's edge, and maybe they want to give Backlund a Mania match. I mean, he had never had one, you know, and he was one of their biggest legends in company history. So maybe it was like, all right, let's get Backlund on the card and give him a moment. I don't know who else could have slotted in at that point. I mean, Kid wasn't on the scene. Marty Jannetty was already fired. Crush is busy. Like, he's someone that could have been cool. Tatanka's got something else going on. Like, unless you put it someone like really scrubby, like Backlund kind of just fits that slot. But I do think they should have done something to build at least a little bit of heat. And I also think he could have won a little more decisively, because they are continuing his push, and Backlund's really not set for a push. I mean, Backlund doesn't do much of anything for at least another year or so. He just kind of exists on the card. You could have done Tito, I guess, right? Because Tito's on the pre-show. He could have kept his Mania streak alive and maybe fed him, and he would have taken the Razor's Edge for sure, because I think he takes it. I think they fight in a Kingdom Ring qualifier soon. So I think Tito would have definitely taken the edge and put him over a little bit stronger coming out of WrestleMania 9. All right. One last. We'll do a quick sports one from Scotty Shiflett. He says, what is the biggest sports what if? I'm going to make this Homer. I'm going to Homer on this one. My what if is if Don Mattingly's back holds up and he does not have to retire in 1995. Does he get his World Series ring with the Yankees in 1996? I think he does. I think they still win. As great as Tino Martinez was, I think Donnie would have been just as good. So that's my personal what if. My extremely personal what if is if COVID doesn't hit, the Providence Friars, only can happen to them, one of the top three red hot teams in the country in college basketball heading into March Madness. They were about to make some noise in the Big East tournament. They had won like five of the last six games. It was something ridiculous. They beat Villanova on the road. They were so hot. Everyone had them pegged for making a deep run. And then COVID just destroyed that whole postseason. And then I think overall, I mean, there's always the Michael Jordan one, right? Like, what if he doesn't leave for baseball? Or if you're into the conspiracy, what if he doesn't leave for, for gambling reasons? Do they win eight in a row, you know, instead of the six, right? Does Hakeem not get his rings? Do we get a big collision, a showdown? I think Houston versus Chicago one of those years could have been really cool. Do the Knicks, does Ewing never make an NBA championship final? Because, you know, they only got there in 94 with the Bulls out of the way. They couldn't get by them before that. So, you know, does that go differently for them too? So I think that's an interesting one. I mean, obviously there's millions of what ifs, right? This book's been written about all the great sports what ifs. So, I mean, there's a semi-personal one, a very personal one, and a general one. I mean, what if Larry Bird's back doesn't go out? Do the Celtics stay more competitive? What if Reggie Lewis doesn't die? You know, do they continue to compete if Bird's there and they have him? So, I mean, maybe, I don't know. That's another what if. I guess I'm just kind of stuck in that era of basketball right now. More recently, what if the Patriots never cheat? Do they never win all those titles? That's one for you. You can think about it. You can gnaw on a little bit. What if Drew Bledsoe doesn't get hurt? Do they make the change to Brady? Do they ever get there? What if Bill Belichick doesn't quit the Jets? Now I'm just getting depressed. All right. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. Let's see if we can add one more wrestling one in here. I don't know if we got any quick ones. I got one from Calvin Crowell. I'm not ready to read that. All right. Let's go back to Richard Colone. One last one. When are you going to start watching Impact, NWA, and MLW? All right, Richard, listen, buddy. I only get so many hours in the day. I do 95 podcasts. I got all this old shit I got to watch. But I will say this. I have told myself that with fans back, I'm going to try and reestablish some sort of viewing pattern for current wrestling. I really struggled with the empty arenas. I really struggled with the stupid fucking Thunderdome, even though there's some people that like it. I just couldn't get into it consistently. So I am going to try, you know, to back. I was really into AEW before the pandemic, and I stuck with them a bit more throughout, too, because they had at least the fans and some. It felt a little bit more lively toward the back end of things. So I definitely, you know, continue to watch Dynamite. I'm going to try and refocus a little bit on WWE, especially headed toward SummerSlam. I did watch Impact a couple weeks ago. So the problem is I don't have access. I have YouTube TV. So it goes up on the Impact app. Oh, Jesus Christ. I need a drink, I guess. Impact Plus app, but it's a week behind. But the one I watched is still, they're in a completely empty arena. They don't even have any fans, not even like the fake wrestling fans. So I really struggled with that. So I might park there until they come back with some semblance of fans. NWA, I just, again, as an MLW time things. For me, MLW seems really cool. You know, the stuff I read about it. So maybe I'll try and check it out. But again, it's just like a time thing for me. I'm watching, you know, 03 TNA, 96 Raw, 96 Nitro, ECW from 96, every fucking goddamn entry in the 1991 Royal Rumble a million goddamn times. So with all that, plus 90210, plus some current stuff, it's just, I'm kind of a critical mass. But I'm going to try, just for you, buddy, I'm going to try and sneak a little bit more in. And I appreciate everyone who took the time to leave a question. I hope you all have a great rest of your summer. I'll talk to you soon around SummerSlam time. Continue to listen to everything on the North South Connection. Rate us, leave feedback across all our shows. Honestly, just go to any podcatcher app, whether it's Apple Podcasts or whatever. Rate us, review us, because it just helps us get eyes and ears on our stuff. And we really appreciate the time you take to listen to this and to spread the word. I'm out. Talk to you tomorrow. Take care. This is it. What? Luchini pouring from the sky. Let's get rich. What? The GT Boss and Sugar Dime. Can't quit. What? Now pop the cork and see the bigger and